It was a way to solve puzzles without all the mess and drama. Haig's office was on the second floor. It looked the same as ever. Copies of scholarly articles were tacked to the bulletin board outside, along with the hodgepodge of New Yorker cartoons, art postcards, and a single dry red maple leaf, broad and crumbling beneath the pin. The door was closed, and no light shone underneath. But Haig had a notorious habit of hiding from his students during office hours. She rapped softly on the door. Silence answered. She stood there, uncertain, waiting. Then she saw a shadow moving under the door. A knowing smile spread over her lips. Gotcha. Dr. Haig? She called softly. It's Veronica Mars, one of your old students. I was wondering if I could speak to you. For a long moment, nothing happened. She started to wonder if she'd miscalculated. Maybe he wouldn't even remember her. The thought sent a surprising ache through her chest. Then the door jerked inward, and Dr. Haig filled the entryway. The first thing anyone noticed about Will Haig was his height, a perfectly ludicrous 6'6". He was beanpole thin, a series of jutting angles strung together with tweed like some academic scarecrow. An overgrown goatee hung from his chin, gray, shot through with a few lingering strands of red. A startled, pleased expression lit his eyes when he saw her. "Well, well," he said. "Veronica Mars." "Hi, Dr. Haig," she smiled up at him. The top of her head was more or less level with his armpit. "Sorry to drop in like this. How are you?" He checked his watch and grimaced. "I'd be fine if not for the faculty meeting this afternoon. If I have to sit for another hour listening to Hobbs drone on about the budget..." Veronica grinned. In her time as his research assistant and occasional administrative aide, she'd helped Dr. Haig dodge more meetings than he made. "Tell them you've got food poisoning. Or have you tried conjunctivitis?" "Alas, Zhang threatened to send security to my office with manacles next time." He pushed his glasses up his nose with one finger. "But I have a few minutes before I have to slink my way over there. Come in." He walked behind his desk and pulled open the blinds, allowing sunlight to fill the little office. Heavy books lined his floor-to-ceiling shelves. A blue and gold Rothko poster hung on one wall, his 30-year-old Schwinn parked beneath. On the desk was a small pile of dark blue yarn. Haig was a compulsive knitter, sometimes even knitting straight through a meeting. He claimed it helped him think, and perhaps it did. He was one of the foremost research psychologists in his field. All Veronica knew for certain was that he was patently terrible at the knitting itself, the evidence clear in the misshapen sweaters and lumpy scarves he wore daily. He sat down in his chair, pivoting back and forth a little.
"So what brings you back to our beloved institution, Veronica? Last I heard, you were still in New York. You must be done with law school by now, yes?"
Yes, I am." She sat down across from him.
"So how's life as a big-time lawyer?" His voice dropped. "Or are you in Quantico now? I always suspected you'd end up with the Bureau, especially after the work you did with me on risk aversion and antisocial personalities. You've got exactly the kind of mind they need there."
Veronica gave a weak smile.
"Well, I'm still working with antisocial personalities."
She cleared her throat. "I'm actually working as a private investigator now, in Neptune." Dr. Haig's surprise writhed around his face before settling into a confused smile. Veronica stifled a sigh. Why did every man in her life have to look at her like she was a personal disappointment?
"A private... well, that's interesting."
He took off his glasses and made a show of cleaning them on the edge of his shirt. She could almost hear the gears turning in his head. Haig's background was in deviant behavior and psychopathology. Throw away a $150,000 education in order to track down deadbeat dads, bail jumpers, and philanderers? Didn't get any more deviant than that.
Very interesting, he repeated, putting his glasses back on. Are you enjoying that, then?
I'm actually here on a job, Dr. Haig, and I was hoping to ask you a few questions about one of your students, Chad Cohan. Veronica held up a photo she'd found of him online. He blinked.
Chad Cohan, he's in my social psych class, Tuesdays and Thursdays. A lacrosse player, right? He's the one who misses half my classes for away games, he snorted. I'm supposed to pass him anyway. Apparently, he's a big deal on the field.
I take it you're not impressed?
Oh, he's clever enough. He does good work when he's in class. Just turned in a strong paper on social cognition.
But, she prodded. He hesitated.
What exactly is this about, Veronica? What do you think he did?
She pressed her lips together for a moment, measuring her answer. I'd rather not say, Dr. Haig. I don't want to color your findings. His face lit up with a sudden, brilliant grin.
Perhaps you are in the right line of work after all.
He picked up his knitting, absently, winding the yarn around the needles.
Well, I don't know how much help I'll be. I only see him twice a week, at most. He's smart, a little full of himself, frequently seems to have an entourage. His work is competent. He's making an A. He wouldn't be if I were allowed to dock him points for missing class, but...
He shrugged. Veronica leaned forward a little. Do you happen to remember if he was on time for your class on the 11th of March? It was last Tuesday.
My TA keeps a roster?
Haig leaned over and picked up a canvas satchel that was propped next to his desk. He pulled out a jumble of paperwork, shuffling through until he found what he was looking for.
The 11th? That was the day I asked everyone to hand in their lab reports. Yes, he was there.
He held up the attendance roster to show her the neat little checkmark by Cohan's name. Did anything strike you as out of the ordinary that morning? Did he seem strained or tired or distracted? Haig frowned a little, trying to recall. Then he shook his head.
I honestly didn't notice anything like that. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. This is helpful. She smiled earnestly at him. He cast a quick glance at his watch and made a face.
I hate to run, but I do have to get to this meeting or they'll release the hounds.
She shot to her feet. Of course. Thanks so much for your time, Dr. Haig. She stuck out her hand, and he shook it warmly.
Give me a call the next time you're in town. I'd love to catch up more.
I will. Back out in the balmy afternoon air, she took a deep breath, Haig's words ringing in her ears. Not what he'd said about Chad Cohan, but what he'd said about her. Perhaps you are in the right line of work after all. She hadn't realized how desperate she was to hear that from someone. The gratitude and relief she felt at his words was almost embarrassing. But she didn't have time to dwell on that now. It was time to track down Chad Cohan. Chapter 9. Veronica found Chad as he left his 3 o'clock international relations class. She recognized him from his Facebook pictures, a tall, wiry boy with light hair, a sharply defined jaw, and wide, sensual lips. He walked for a ways in a small cluster of other students, all talking animatedly. Veronica wasn't close enough to make out what they were saying. She hung back, walking slowly, but keeping Cohan in sight. He broke off from his group as they passed the library. Veronica followed him through Canfield Court, where groundskeepers were blowing leaves off the walk, and then up another narrow street. In front of the New Guinea Sculpture Garden, he paused to talk to a slender girl in a knit beanie before turning up the walk to his dormitory and disappearing through its wide double doors. Veronica found a spot on a bench outside and sat down, pulling out her phone and pretending to text. She wanted to give him a few minutes to get to his room and start to feel safe. Cohan liked to be in control. If she caught him off guard, he might reveal something he hadn't intended. After about 10 minutes, she stood up. She followed two girls holding hands up to the double doors. They swiped their pass card and then, assuming she was a student too, held the door open for her. "Thanks," she chirped. Mac had gotten Cohan's dorm number out of the Stanford databases. He was on the first floor and at the end of a dimly lit hallway. Veronica walked slowly down the corridor. A few doors were propped open with concrete blocks. Inside, kids sprawled across their beds, highlighting passages in enormous books or hunched at their computers playing games. Music floated through the dorm from a dozen different places, Kanye West, Vampire Weekend, and the Indigo Girls weaving together a clumsy mashup. No one seemed to notice Veronica, or if they did, they gave her brief, distracted nods. Chad Cohan's door was decorated with clippings of his lacrosse wins. A few articles had pictures of him in his red and white uniform, hurling the ball toward the net, face obscured by his helmet. The whiteboard on his door was covered in doodles, well wishes, and enigmatic bro-speak. "Good luck, Chad," smiley face. "Spank the ducks this weekend." "Where are you?" sad face. Veronica took a deep breath and knocked softly. A few seconds passed, and the door opened. Chad Cohan stood in the doorway, looking politely startled. His pale blue eyes flitted over her face, his brow furrowed. "Hi, Chad," she offered up a disarmingly bright smile. "Sorry to bother you. My name's Veronica Mars. I'm assisting in the search for Haley DeWalt, and I was hoping you could answer a few questions for me." He blinked rapidly 3-4 times. Then he seemed to shake himself into action. "Of course." He opened his door a little wider to let her in. The room was fastidiously neat. The bedspread was smooth and tight against the mattress, and the shelves were devoid of clutter, no toys or tchotchkes, no mementos. A few framed nature prints in black and white hung on the walls, perfectly centered.
"Are you a police officer?"
he asked, turning to face her.
"I talked to the sheriff on the phone the other day. I already told him everything I know, which unfortunately isn't much."
"No, I'm actually a private investigator. I've been hired to assist with the case." His face remained almost still, a mask of civil curiosity, but she thought she caught a flicker of skepticism as he looked her over. "Fine, let him underestimate me. I can work with that."
"Do you have any new information about what may have happened to Haley? I still can't get over that she's missing," he said, closing the door.
"Not yet." She moved slowly around the room, looking at the books on his shelves, the few framed photos perched on top of the dresser and desk. They showed Chad, smiling with friends and family, in fancy restaurants, on the steps of Mayan ruins, outside the Paris Opera House. There was one of Haley, sitting on a boulder and looking out over the ocean, her hair whipping in the breeze. Veronica picked it up. Chad stiffened, almost imperceptibly, as if having a stranger handle his belongings physically pained him.
"Did you take this?"
She held it up, baiting him. "It's great work. I'm something of an amateur photographer myself."
Yeah.
He moved closer to her, gently taking the picture from her hands and setting it back on the shelf exactly where it had been, just as she suspected he might.
"I did. Haley was a great subject."
"She's a pretty girl." Veronica smiled as he gave the photo one more minute adjustment. Textbook control freak with a side of OCD. He sat down on the edge of his desk. His long, slender fingers tapped a quick, syncopated rhythm against the top.
"Look, I want to help find Haley, but I'm not sure what I can tell you. We actually kind of broke up before she went to Neptune."
Veronica gave him a wistful, sympathetic smile. Between the smiley faces and loopy handwriting on his whiteboard and the way Haley's friends had described him, she guessed that Chad was used to solicitous female attention.
"That's what I heard. And I'm sorry if this is painful for you. I didn't come to open up any wounds. I'm just trying to get a better sense of who Haley was, what she was like. I was hoping you could help me fill in a few of those blanks."
He hesitated, then nodded.
"Sure, sure. If it'll help you find her, I'll tell you anything I can."
"Thanks." She held his gaze for a moment, then took her notebook from her purse, flipping to a blank page.
How long were you and Haley together?
5 months, on and off.
He glanced at the photo on the dresser, as if checking with Haley's image to affirm this was right.
We met at a Hey Marseille concert. I saw her across the room during Heartbeats. I knew I had to be with her the second I laid eyes on her.
Veronica gave an aw, so sweet smile, jotting down romantic lead in his own imaginary movie in her notebook. How often did you see each other? Berkeley's almost an hour away. I'd imagine it's not an easy trip to make when you're busy with school.
She came down on the weekends, sometimes during the week, if we weren't too busy, but weekdays we mostly talked on the phone.
And when you got together, what kind of stuff did you do?
He leaned back a little, his collar gaped, and for the first time she noticed a long scratch along his neck. It looked like the skin had been broken, but it was mostly healed now.
Interesting. Lacrosse injury? Or something else?
We went to movies, to parties. She came to my games. We studied together sometimes. I was trying to help her decide what she wanted to major in. She kept talking about nutritional science, but I thought she should take a wider focus, do biology or chemistry. I mean, why settle for nutritionist when you could aim for doctor?
He shrugged.
She had a tendency to sell herself short.
Haley's friends told me you guys fought a lot.
Haley's friends need to mind their own business.
Color rose in his cheeks, his body tensing.
Look, we had ups and downs, obviously, but Haley's friends were always trying to convince her to dump me. It caused a lot of problems between us. They'd put things in her head, give her crazy ideas about me. They told her I was trying to control her, like they weren't.
He rolled his eyes.
Haley can be really innocent. She trusts people too easily. I worried about her a lot. She'd call me to tell me she was on her way to some frat party or some club, and I'd spend the whole night imagining awful things.
Is that why you broke up?
His eyes didn't move from Veronica's.
He hesitated for a moment, as if reading something in her face. After a moment, he nodded.
I asked her not to go to Neptune. I tried to tell her what the scene's like. Crazy, depraved, dangerous. She wouldn't listen to me.
His eyes narrowed slightly.
I take it you've been there yourself, Veronica said wryly.
He shrugged. I've been. Don't get me wrong, I like a good party as much as anyone, but that place gets wild as hell. I didn't like the idea of her down there, and I hate to say it, but I was right. She shouldn't have gone.
Veronica didn't let her expression change. She glanced down at her notebook as if reading from a list of questions, so he wouldn't realize how his words and body language guided the conversation. According to Haley's phone records, you called her the night she disappeared at 12:13 a.m. That was the first time you'd called her in 5 days, but prior to that you guys talked at least twice a day, and often as many as 6 times every day for months. Can I ask what you talked about?
His pupils flared ever so slightly. When he spoke, his voice was even and simple. I wanted her back. Look, the night we fought, things got kind of heated. I said some things I wasn't proud of. I'm sure she did too. After that, I couldn't think about anything else for days. I was mad and ashamed and just exhausted.
The intensity of his gaze was unsettling.
Have you ever had a relationship that you knew wasn't working, couldn't work, would never work, but you just couldn't help yourself because the way it didn't work was so damn good? That was me and Haley. That was what we had.
Veronica looked down at her notebook to hide her uneasiness. His words needled her, working their way under her skin. Yes, she'd had that relationship. She'd had that relationship over and over and over. She'd broken a lot of things for that relationship. And now here she was, back in it again. Chad paused for half a beat, then continued.
Anyway, I'm assuming you've seen what she posted on Facebook that night. I freaked out when I saw the pictures of her with that other guy, so I called her. We talked for a few minutes. I told her I was sorry, that I'd do better. I asked her for another chance. She told me, in no uncertain terms, she wasn't interested.
He raked his hand through his hair, the front pieces standing up in short spikes.
Veronica frowned. You didn't happen to get a name, did you? Did she tell you who the guy was?
He looked away. She didn't say. She was more interested in telling me what a great kisser he was, he said bitterly.
Veronica sat for a moment, her mind sifting through the information, moving it from one column to the next. Sure, Chad Cohan might be a run-of-the-mill disgruntled ex, still reeling from the Sturm und Drang of a complicated relationship. Maybe it was worse than that. Maybe he was as controlling and demanding as Bree and Melanie claimed, as controlling and demanding as Veronica read him to be now. That didn't necessarily mean he was involved in whatever happened to Haley, but something about him raised the hair on the back of Veronica's neck. She asked her next question in a carefully neutral voice. Where were you the night you talked to Haley? He looked up quickly. She kept her expression unreadable.
It was midterms, so I was in the library working on a paper until around 12:30. Then I went home.
Did anyone see you there?
A sudden cold smile broke across his face. It changed his looks with the rapidity of a flash flood. The blandly helpful demeanor vanished, replaced with an air of contempt.
After 10 p.m., you have to use your student ID to get in and out of the library. You can probably get those records from the school. I don't remember seeing anyone in the dorm when I got home. I went straight to bed. But I was in an 11 a.m. class the next morning. Plenty of people saw me there.
His words were matter-of-fact, derisive.
So unless you think I can teleport, no. I didn't drive overnight to Neptune to abduct Haley. Sorry, this time the boyfriend didn't do it.
Ex-boyfriend, Veronica said pleasantly. Right? His smile didn't falter.
If I were you, I'd focus on tracking down the guy in the picture. Plenty of people saw him with Haley. The whole internet saw him with Haley.
That must have really made you mad, Chad, she said, trying one last time to goad him. He leaned forward, his eyes boring into hers.
No, he said simply. It broke my fucking heart.
Chapter 10.
So his alibi checked out? Mac asked on Wednesday morning.
Veronica was back in the office, leaning against the color printer as it churned out copies. Mac sat on the edge of her desk a few feet away, her slender legs crossed at the ankles, her short hair falling over her forehead. Her coffee mug was printed in running lines of binary.
Veronica was willing to stake a day's pay on the fact that it read something like, "Hackers do it better," in code.
Completely. According to the surveillance cameras, he left the library at 12:26, and Professor Haig said he was on time for his 11 a.m. class the next day. There's no way he could have made it from Stanford to Neptune and back in that window, even if he was driving like a bat out of hell. She sighed.
Did you dig anything else up?
Mac shook her head.
He didn't use any of his credit cards that night or the next day, and he didn't fly, or if he did, the FAA didn't know about it.
Veronica stared over Mac's head at the window. Outside, the bricks of the warehouses looked a brilliant red in the afternoon light. The truth was, she'd wanted it to be Chad. Between what Haley's friends had told her about him and her own investigative spidey sense, he'd looked like a perfect suspect. She'd spent the whole evening at Stanford, questioning security guards and professors about him. She'd even talked to a few of his friends. One hulking boy, with a nose that had obviously caught more than its share of lacrosse balls, said he'd always told Chad not to tie himself down with Haley.
He gets all caught up trying to imagine what she's doing. I'm like, man, the point of having a girlfriend on the other side of the bay is so she doesn't know what you're doing. Why are you making such a thing of it? Let the girl have her fun and just make sure you're getting yours.
Another one of Chad's teammates told her it was obvious that Chad had been head over heels in love.
She was all he talked about. He sent her flowers every week. He took her on a couple crazy shopping sprees for new clothes and jewelry. I mean, I've never seen him lose his head over a girl like this.
Ah, true love.
Whoever went wrong measuring it in dollar signs. But there wasn't any evidence pointing her toward Haley's ex, and his alibi was airtight. There were no recent charges on his credit card, except for the aforementioned shopping sprees and athletic socks from the campus bookstore. It didn't matter what she thought of what sounded like a very Stella and Stanley relationship if it didn't get her closer to the truth.
Well, I got some interesting returns on the background checks you asked for.
Max set down her cup and rummaged around on the cluttered desk for a minute before finding a plain manila folder that read DeWalt on the tab. She handed it to Veronica.
The first search didn't pull anything up, but I did a little creative digging.
Veronica flipped through the pages. Crane DeWalt has a record?
It's a juvenile record, so it took a little extra work to find. The Montana Department of Corrections seals them when the offender turns 18, but their databases are, not that secure.
Mac looked innocently out the window, and Veronica grinned. Underage intoxication, shoplifting, possession, she read. All kid stuff, until... Oh, wow. Aggravated assault? She flipped through the documents. At 16, Crane DeWalt had attacked another kid with a bike chain wrapped around his fist. The victim lost two teeth and the use of his left eye. Crane was sentenced to 9 months in juvie.
He's been clean since then, but he definitely has a temper. I've been going through his employment history. Looks like he was let go from a Kinko's after getting in a shouting match with a customer. He's been doing odd jobs for more than a year now.
Interesting. Veronica closed the folder. Anything in his recent history that might place him in Neptune the night Haley disappeared? Credit cards, phone calls, flight records? Max shook her head.
He has 6 credit cards, all in default, no savings, $12.60 in his checking account, so not a lot of traceable activity.
If he works under the table, he might have a wad of cash, though, and freeing up some of his parents' income from Berkeley's tuition fees would be motive, mused Veronica. Max's eyes widened.
Motive? So are you saying he killed her?
No, and that's the problem, Veronica frowned. I don't even know what crime I'm investigating yet, and I won't until I piece together what really happened that night. She met Max's eyes again. What did you pull up on the party house?
Not a lot. It's a rental, owned by a company called Sun and Surf, Inc., Mac frowned. I'm still digging, but as far as I can tell, that particular address wasn't rented out to anyone the night in question. According to their records, every single property they have is rented through the month of March. Every single property except that one.
Veronica was about to respond when loud voices on the stairwell interrupted her thoughts. She and Mac both looked up to see Wallace Fennell herding 2 teenage boys through the office doors. Neither one looked happy.
"This is blackmail," said one.
He was a tall, dark-skinned boy with long, gangly limbs, a Lakers cap perched at a jaunty angle over his forehead. The other boy was shorter, with carroty red hair and a light smattering of acne over his pale face. He stared around the room in mutinous silence.
"You can't do this to us," the first boy said.
"Excellent," said Veronica, pushing up off the copy machine. "My assistants have arrived."
Mac looked at Veronica, one eyebrow raised.
"You're what?"
"This one tried to bolt while we were coming up the stairs,"
Wallace said, jerking his head toward the first boy.
"You'll have to keep an eye on him."
"Hey, Mac."
"Hi, Wallace.
Why are you delivering urchins to our door?"
"Because I'm a helpful guy. Veronica Mars says she needs boots on the ground. I find her some boots."
Wallace gave a lopsided grin, running a hand over the stubble of his goatee.
"See, Coach Fennell knows all and sees all. I caught 2 of my best players in the Cabo Cantina with the worst excuses for fake IDs I've ever seen. In exchange for my clemency, they're gonna help you out this afternoon."
The kid in the hat turned around to scowl at Wallace.
"It's no fair. You can't give us detention for something that happened during spring break. We weren't even at school, Coach."
Wallace gave him a pleasant smile.
"You're right, TJ. I can't give you detention, but I can bench you for the rest of the season. Or, now here's an idea, I could call your mom."
A look of horror flitted over the kid's face. Wallace pretended to pick up a phone.
"Ring, ring. Well, hello, Mrs. Wiggins. I just wanted to make sure the TJ's allowed to drink 3-foot pina coladas, right?
Wallace dropped his hand. But see, I want to keep my point guard alive. So instead, I'm giving you the option of a few hours' work to pay your debt to society. Sound fair?
The kid nodded, eyes wide.
How about you, Quentin?
He turned to the redhead, who nodded too. Veronica grabbed the stack of flyers off the copier and held one up. She'd arranged two pictures of Haley on the page, both of them from the night Haley went missing. One showed her on the dance floor, her hair suspended in midair as she moved. The other showed her curled up on a couch with the handsome stranger. Instead of the tip line, she'd put the number of one of Mars Investigation's dedicated phone lines across the flyer.
I need you guys to hit the pavement for me. Put these up on lampposts, hand them out on the boardwalk, see if you can get them up in shop windows, especially in places where there are lots of spring breakers.
They both took stacks of flyers from her, their eyes darting over the pictures. They exchanged glances, and then TJ looked up with an earnest and helpful expression on his face.
Do you need us to interview people, too? We can ask around, see if anyone wants to talk to us, you know, on the beach.
Veronica gave him a piercing look before she answered.
You have my permission to talk to any bikini babe you want as long as you get the flyers circulating. And as long as you are perfect gentlemen who do not make your coach or your team look bad, interjected Wallace pointedly, because your next not detention isn't going to be this easy, got it?
TJ looked insulted.
Hey, I don't need lessons on how to respect the ladies. I respect all the ladies. Skinny ones, medium ones. Boys,
Veronica clapped her hands, let's focus here. I need you to get these out as quickly as possible. As an added incentive, if I do find Haley, I'll give you $100.
Both boys looked suddenly alert.
Each? Asked TJ.
Each, said Veronica.
So make sure you get these flyers posted in as many places as you can. This will only work if they get seen.
TJ and Quentin turned to each other, strategizing in low voices, deciding where they could get the most flyers seen by the most people versus where the hottest and least dressed girls hung out. It seemed to be mostly TJ doing the strategizing, with Quentin muttering, "Yeah, yeah," every few seconds. Veronica turned to Wallace.
Thanks, she said, handing him another pile. You're a lifesaver.
Can't say I plan to spend my spring break supervising teenagers, he said under his breath. You owe me, Mars.
Just add it to my tab.
He grinned.
So what are you guys doing tonight? Want to go get a few beers?
Tempting, Max said, but I thought I'd stab my eyes out with a spoon instead.
Come on, it's not nearly as crazy out there as it was last year.
He looked from her to Veronica.
If I'm going to be wrangling these kids all day, I'm going to need a little R&R, you know what I mean?
An idea suddenly came to Veronica. A slow, thoughtful smile spread over her face. Wallace's eyes widened, and he leaned back a little.
It scares me when you smile like that.
Scares you? Wallace, come on. Don't you trust me?
Are you looking for the honest answer or the one where we stay on speaking terms?
All right, fine. She lifted up her hands in mock surrender. I thought you were looking for some R&R, but if you don't want an invite to the party of the season, I can't make you go with me. He gave her a wary look.
Party of the season?
Party of the century, if the stories are to be believed.
Uh-huh. Veronica Mars, social butterfly. No one's buying it. So what's the catch?
No catch. She looped her arm through his. But if we're lucky, we may just score some information on what happened to Haley DeWalt. Chapter 11. Manzanita Drive was a winding road that ran parallel to Neptune's northern coastline, surrounded on both sides by the dense foliage that cloaked the hideaways of the super rich. A lot of the houses were vacation homes for movie stars, diplomats, and CEOs, though a few were permanently occupied. Logan's friend Dick Casablancas lived on the drive, in a Cape Cod overlooking the Pacific. Veronica had passed his gates earlier that night when she'd gone to check out the house Haley's friends had told her about. They'd said there were theme parties there every night, and from the aloha shirts and flower leis she saw as she drove by the crowd of waiting guests, it looked like tonight was a tiki party. She'd run home after, hoping against hope there was something trashy and tropical at the back of her closet. When she emerged an hour later, she was wearing a skin-tight red sarong dress, purchased more than a decade earlier for the Pep Squad's annual luau-themed fundraiser. She'd curled her hair in bouncy Marilyn ringlets and, as an afterthought, picked one of her dad's plumeria blossoms and pinned it behind her ear. When her father caught sight of her, he did a double take.
"Hot date at the Tonga Room, dear?"
Keith sat on the sofa, a battered paperback copy of Get Shorty in one hand. Veronica kissed him on the forehead. "Don't wait up," she said, looping her arm through the straw tote bag she'd traded for her studded leather purse, then leaving to pick up Wallace. Now they were waiting in the house's gated driveway behind a RAV4 full of college kids. Beyond the gate, through a copse of palm trees, she could make out the pulsing glow of a mansion. Laughter, shrieks, and the steady thump of bass reverberated in the cool night air. She angled the rearview mirror toward her and reapplied her lipstick. "Think I can pass for a co-ed?" she asked, blowing a red kiss at Wallace.
"Do you really want me to answer that?"
he said, wearing an aloha shirt that belonged to Keith, procured on a Maui vacation a few years earlier. It hung off him, two sizes too big. He caught her grinning and narrowed his eyes.
"I know you're just marveling that I can look this good in a Don Ho shirt."
"Hell yeah, I am," she said, rolling the car forward as the line moved up. She could now see a cluster of dump truck-sized security guards standing in front of the open gate. Veronica watched as one by one the occupants of each car stepped out. One guard appraised the guests and decided if they were going in or not. If they got the nod, a second guard, or maybe just an incredibly muscular valet, would step up and take the wheel of their car, while a third guard patted the guests down.
"What kind of party is this again?"
Wallace stared at the enormous security guards ahead of them, brows arched skeptically.
"That's what we're here to find out."
It was all very organized for a spring break rager, which led Veronica to believe that either the parties were some kind of marketing campaign, maybe put on by a party promoter who had a special deal with Sun and Surf Inc., or an alcohol distributor launching a new product. Or perhaps the owner of the mansion had some very good reason to keep security tight. A guard waved Veronica forward, and her heart sped up as she pulled up to the gatehouse.
"Evening. Can you both get out of the car for me?"
He was polite and no nonsense. A professional, for sure. Maybe even ex-military?
"Sure."
Her voice was immediately up a half octave from usual, with a buoyant, eager tone. She opened the car door and stepped out on her towering wedges, looking around wide-eyed. "This is so amazing. Is this like a movie star's mansion or something? Oh my gosh, tell me it's Robert Pattinson's, because if it is, I think I might die. No, wait, don't tell me." The guard was a hulking man with buzzed hair and a squashed-looking nose. The buttons on his aloha shirt strained to contain his bulk. If he hadn't looked so exhausted, he might have been terrifying. His expression, long-suffering but patient, didn't move as he listened to her prattle. One of the guards back by the gatehouse muttered something in Spanish she couldn't quite hear, his eyes traveling over her. The others laughed. Veronica waited, her eyes ingenue wide. All of them were packing heat. She could see the telltale bulges of their holsters under their clothes, the way they all angled their bodies gunside away. She felt a prick of unease in the pit of her stomach. She hadn't brought her taser, a staple when she was on the job. After her drive-by earlier, she'd anticipated being searched. More than the thin, flimsy cotton dress that barely covered her torso, its absence made her feel strangely naked.
"So, is there, like, some kind of cover charge? Do I have to buy a cup, or..."
She trailed off, cocking her head at the guard. He was watching her with an unmoving expression, almost as if waiting out her monologue. On the other side of the car, Wallace gave her a nervous glance over the hood, his arms held stiffly out while another guard patted him down. The two guards looked at each other. The one patting down Veronica took her keys right out of her hand and gave her a small red ticket.
Okay, ma'am, here's your claim ticket for the car. When you're ready to get out of here, just bring it back. We'll get it for you.
Veronica staggered to Wallace's side and looped her arm through his.
Thanks so much, guys.
Come on, Wallace. Let's party.
She let out a wild whoop, tugging him along up the drive. He looked behind them.
Man, these guys are organized.
Organized and armed. Her nerves felt white hot and electric as they walked up the driveway. A full moon had come up over the bluffs and cast deep shadows across the lawn. The house itself was lit like a beacon, every window shining in the darkness. It was a sprawling, modern structure of slate and glass, set right on the beach. She passed a few clusters of stray partygoers on her way to the door. A girl in a grass skirt and faux coconut shell bikini top staggered across the lawn after her friend, yelling,
"Come on, Heather, don't be like that!"
Her coconuts had gotten knocked askew, but she seemed to be too drunk to realize she was flashing half the party. The closer they got to the house, the more kids there were, laughing and sharing bottles of tequila or passed out under palm trees. They stopped to make sure one boy, face down in the grass, was still breathing, then rolled him onto his side and left him there.
"Another sacrifice to the party gods," Veronica muttered.
At the porch, they paused. She checked her watch. It was just after 10.
"All right, time to go in. We'll cover more ground if we split up, but let's meet out front in, say, 2 hours. Text me if anything gets crazy, though, all right?"
"Sure, sure."
He watched a couple of girls in Uggs and bikinis tumble out the door, laughing hysterically. He shook his head.
"You know, I remember the girls being my own age at spring break. I don't want to be the creepy old guy. Remember Lucky Dohanic? Where's the party this weekend, guys?"
"Just relax," she smiled, straightening his collar. "Try to have a little fun, and keep your eyes peeled for anything weird." They pushed through the wide oak doors. The entryway was a marble cavern, a crush of bared limbs and gyrating hips filling the space from wall to wall. Instantly, the mingled smell of boozy sweat and 100 pungent colognes assaulted Veronica's nostrils. Girls in grass skirts and bikini tops pressed up against bare-chested boys in open aloha shirts. From the second-floor landing, a DJ draped in koa bead necklaces played exotica lounge music, remixed with a heavy bass. A sudden spray of liquid flecked her exposed skin as someone popped a cork and dumped champagne over the crowd. A cheer went up. She glanced at Wallace one last time. He shrugged, then joined in the cheering, throwing his hands over his head and pushing into the crowd. Veronica turned and staggered toward the hallway as if drunk. She marked 3 surveillance cameras in the upper angles of the room, aimed down at the crowd. "Wonder if those come standard with all Sun and Surf's rental homes, or if they're special for this one." The house was mind-blowingly lavish, even for Neptune. She passed through a music room painted in an eye-burning crimson. Guitars hung off the walls, Fenders and Gibsons and Yamahas, in a dozen glossy shades of wood and polymer. A muscular boy in Bermuda shorts played Lady Gaga's Born This Way on a gleaming grand piano. A few doors down was a billiard room, cigar smoke hovering over the red felt tables as a crowd gathered to watch a long-limbed girl in tight jeans and a lei aim her shot. Then there was a small theater where Spring Breakers was showing. Popcorn and empty bottles covered the floor, and beneath the sound of the movie she could make out low moans from amorous couples. Tiki torches burned on the back terrace. A luau-style spread was laid out across several buffet tables, including a whole pig with an apple in its mouth. A short flight of stairs led down to an infinity-edge pool, choked with naked and half-naked coeds. She watched as a boy with flapping blonde dreadlocks did a cannonball into the middle of a group of girls. In the jacuzzi, the traditional gone wild activities were already commencing. Bikini tops were strewn across the slate stones like so many dead fish. "All right, Veronica, time to schmooze." She got in line for the keg and filled a red solo cup, knowing she'd stick out without a drink. Then she staggered a few lopsided steps right into the middle of a group of kids.
Oh my gosh, I am so sorry.
She gripped the arm of a broad-shouldered guy wearing, of all things, a woman's muumuu and a Hawaiian straw hat. He steadied her, grinning up at his friends.
Hey, no problem. You okay?
Yeah, she said, slurring a little. I've had so much to drink.
Me too, he lifted one fist to the sky. Spring break!
It was like some kind of hunting call. All over the patio, people stopped to lift their plastic cups or jump as high as they could and yell, Spring break! In response. She giggled and held up her own cup, a half second too late.
Yeah, spring break, she shouted, leaning against the guy in the muumuu.
So, what's your name?
He asked.
I'm Amber, she beamed.
The guy in the muumuu couldn't seem to track her very well. He was almost as drunk as she was pretending to be.
Where are you from, Amber?
I'm down from UNLV, she chirped.
UNLV? He boomed. Hey, Trang! Trang! You said you're from UNLV, right? Do you know Amber?
Trang, who'd done his hair in a Hawaiian Elvis pompadour and wore a crushed carnation lei, stared at her with red-veined eyes, swaying slightly on his feet.
Huh?
It's such a big school, Veronica cooed. What's your major, Trang?
Undeclared, he mumbled. Maybe econ.
Oh, I'm in the history department.
She stared around the little group, her hand still on the first guy's arm.
This is so cray. I've never seen a house this big in my life. Whose party is this anyway?
They all shook their heads.
Guy down at the boardwalk invited me, said Trang, after I gave him some E.
Yeah, I got the nod after the rap battle, said a skinny boy with plastic-framed glasses and a yachting cap. Some kid with dreadlocks said I should come, that he liked my rhymes.
So none of you know the host? Veronica stared around the circle. You just heard about it?
Yep, said the guy in the muumuu. It's just like, whoever throws the party sends a dude around looking for cool people, and if you're cool enough to be noticed, you get in.
So awesome, Veronica chirped. But oh my gosh, you guys, did you hear about the girl who went missing last week? Someone in the pool room just told me she disappeared from this house. Isn't that scary?
Someone went missing?
The guy in the yachting cap looked startled.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, dude, her picture's on that billboard over by the Cabo Cantina. She's dead sexy, said the guy in the muumuu.
She was at this party last Monday, and no one saw her after that, Veronica chimed in. None of you guys were here that night, were you? She gave an exaggerated shiver.
So scary.
Shit, no. Last Monday, I was popping Adderall and studying statistics all night, he snorted. Our spring break didn't start till Monday.
The feedback of a microphone interrupted their conversation. They all looked up to see a crowd gathered around a small dais on the lower deck, just to the left of the amoeba-shaped pool. A short, portly guy in a fedora and Hawaiian shirt stood on the dais. For a moment, Veronica couldn't make out what he was saying over the crowd's catcalling. He held up his arms in a placating gesture, and the crowd noise died down.
All right, all right, all right, he shouted,
pacing the length of the riser.
Let me hear you make some noise!
Another cheer went up from the crowd. The guy grinned, pumping his fist in the air.
Spring break! Spring break!
The call went up again, echoing up and down the terrace.
Spring break! All right, we got a special treat for you all tonight. We've got five lovely ladies who are just dying to show you the tan lines they've gotten this week. And folks, you know how small some of these suits are.
A round of hoots sounded from the crowd.
But first, let me introduce the judge. Here he is. Your host tonight, Rico! Everyone give him a round of applause. Come on now!
The crowd screamed. Veronica stared. The man who'd just stepped on the dais was sharply handsome, with deep olive skin, dark hair, and a line of stubble along his jaw. He wore a pair of Bermuda shorts and a lei draped across his sculpted chest. It was the mystery guy from Haley's Pictures, The guy she'd been hanging all over the night she disappeared. Chapter 12. Veronica gripped the balustrade, staring at Rico. He grinned and waved at the crowd, his face lit up by the flickering tiki torches at each end of the stage. Host of the party? He was young, college-aged. Veronica had known plenty of super-rich teenagers, so it wasn't a stretch that Rico was rolling deep enough to rent the place. But according to Mac's research, no one was renting. And there was no way this was an illicit squat. Security was too tight, and apparently there were parties every night. Someone would have noticed by now. Did he own the rental company? Did his parents? Up on the stage, Rico fanned 10 crisp bills out with a snapping motion. He took the microphone from the MC, a wolfish grin spreading across his face.
Just to show how dedicated we are to finding the best tan in Neptune, we've got $1,000 for our winner tonight. How do you like that?
The crowd roared its approval. Rico gave the microphone back to the guy in the fedora and sat back in his chair like a spoiled prince on a throne. The MC paced back to center stage.
And now, if y'all are ready for it, we're gonna start the show. First up is Aurora from Tucson, Arizona. Aurora, why don't you show these people what you got?
An auburn-haired girl in a leopard print bikini leapt lightly up on the dais and shouted a hello into the mic. Some burlesque-style music started up over invisible speakers, and she gyrated on stage, spinning in a slow circle. When her back was to the crowd, she shook her hips, looked over her shoulder, and suggestively pulled the waistband of her suit down, flashing her tanned backside at the audience. Then she untied her halter and spun back around, making the straps dance against her breasts. Tantalizingly, she lowered the triangles of her bikini top, revealing a pale patch of skin underneath. Rico whistled appreciatively, and the crowd went wild.
Take it off! More! Flash!
My cousin thinks he's a ladies' man.
The voice was deep and soft, close to Veronica's ear. She gave a little start and looked up into dark brown eyes, flecked through with greenish gold. The man was about 26 or 27, with dark, curly hair and broad, chiseled cheekbones. Unlike the other guys, dressed in loud floral shirts and flip-flops, he wore a perfectly tailored gray suit, no tie, and black loafers. Around his neck was a single lei made of purple and white orchids.
Your cousin?
She smiled, cocking her head a little. From the suit, the smirk, the casual contempt for Rico's antics, she knew the drunken debutante voice wouldn't work with this guy.
Rico.
He nodded down toward the stage, where Rico was on his feet now, dancing with the tan line contestant.
Like a kid in a candy store.
You don't approve? She asked. She angled her body slightly toward him. Her heart beat fast, but she kept her movements composed.
Oh, I don't mind at all. I love a good party as much as anyone. But Rico likes to play games, to make it a sport.
And what do you like?
I just like to get what I want.
The way his eyes moved over her left no mystery as to what that was.
I'm Eduardo, he said.
I'm Amber. She glanced around the terrace, gesturing. Is this your place? It's gorgeous.
Thank you. I hope you're enjoying yourself.
What's not to love?
She lifted her cup, then pretended to take a sip.
So what do you do, Eduardo, besides throw amazing parties?
I'm a student myself. I'm doing my MBA at Hearst.
Your MBA? She laughed. What do you need an MBA for? You already have everything an MBA could want. He laughed too.
This is all inherited. I have to be able to stand on my own feet to do my part. Otherwise, it will all be wasted.
That's an interesting outlook.
She frowned slightly, not one she would have expected from someone who threw a high-end carnival every night of spring break.
Family is important. This is how I honor mine.
Below, a fresh contestant was entertaining the audience with the stark white lines under her string bikini.
What's your family's business?
Real estate, mostly. some investments and the like. He waved his hand as if this was all too dull to speak of. Tell me, Amber, would you be interested in walking down the beach with me? It's lovely this time of night, and we can speak a little more privately there than we can here.
He drew closer to her. She could smell notes of sandalwood on his skin, as clean and expensive as everything else he wore. Veronica smiled, calculating. Eduardo struck her as the type who might try even harder to get what he wanted if there was an obstacle in his way.
I don't think my boyfriend would appreciate that.
Eduardo looked around as if expecting to see this alleged boyfriend.
Oh, is he here with you? I didn't notice.
He's inside, dancing, she said. I came out to get some air.
Eduardo leaned closer, his breath warm on her neck.
You know, it's spring break. You're supposed to break the rules on spring break. And in my opinion, any man who'd pick a sweaty dance floor over your company probably doesn't deserve your attention.
She raised an eyebrow.
And it's Rico who thinks he's a ladies' man?
He threw back his head and laughed. Below, on the dais, the women were lining up for the finale, posing like beauty pageant contestants. One suddenly whipped her halter off and shimmied to the raucous approval of the audience. From the depths of her bag, Veronica heard her phone chime.
I'm so sorry, I have to check this, she said, rummaging in her purse.
Of course, he murmured.
She turned her back and took a few steps away, opening the message. It was from Mac. Urgent. House belongs to Federico Gutierrez Ortega and Eduardo Gutierrez Costillo, both students at Hearst, both heirs to a Mexican drug cartel. For a moment, the shrieks and giggles around her seemed to mute, the colors to fade. She stared down at the phone. Rico and Eduardo weren't just college playboys. They were cartel royalty.
Amber, is everything okay?
All at once the world came rushing back. She looked up to see Eduardo, who'd moved in next to her arm. His eyes flitted down to her phone. She locked it and shoved it back into her bag. She shook her head.
I'm sorry, Eduardo, I have to run. Something's come up.
He leveled his dark hazel eyes on her face.
I'm sorry to hear that. I hope everything's okay.
Yes, thank you.
She smiled at him, her pulse throbbing in her temples. Cocaine conspiracy, human trafficking, extortion, kidnapping, murder. The words streaked through her mind.
Thank you for the party, Eduardo. It's been really fun.
She felt his hands close on hers again. His fingers were cool and slightly moist. He lifted her hand to his lips.
I hope we meet again, he murmured.
Down below, Rico Gutierrez Ortega danced with the girls on stage. She gently retracted her hand from Eduardo's, then turned and half stumbled back through the double doors. Wallace. She had to find Wallace. She called him, hands shaking, as she pressed her way through the crowd surrounding the snack-strewn kitchen island. The phone rang a few times and then went to voicemail. The party was probably loud enough that he couldn't hear it. Where are you? She texted. She didn't wait for him to reply, but started down the hallway in search of him. The crowd had gotten denser, more frenzied over the course of the night, and at 5'2", she was at a disadvantage for seeing through it. She stood on her tiptoes, straining to see. She passed a bathroom where a girl was crying in huge, racking sobs. In the billiard room, three hulking guys were wrestling on the floor. She couldn't quite tell if it was fun or not. There was no sign of Wallace. Her phone stayed maddeningly blank. She climbed the stairs to the second floor, where the hallway was slightly less crowded. Through an open bedroom door, she saw a mass of writhing limbs on a king-sized bed. In another, three kids sat around a lava lamp, jaws slack, while a fourth rocked herself on the bed. Suddenly, she felt a hand close around her wrist. She gave a little shriek and turned on her heel, her heart in her throat. Wallace had come up right behind her. He jumped back just as she did, eyes wide.
"Breathe, woman," he laughed, but he looked shaky. "It's just me."
People up and down the hall were looking at them. Most of them were partiers, but she caught sight of a tall, slender man in a Hawaiian shirt with a distinct lump beneath the armpit. Another, burlier and similarly armed, sat under a bay window pretending to text on his phone. She caught his mouth tighten